Hey everyone, I'm Tony, your host of the Grounded Podcast. This podcast is all about sustainable living, urban and not so urban living, homesteading and healthy eating with a healthy dash of permaculture principles and environmentalism. This podcast came from a blog I started nearly two decades ago after accidentally stumbling into gardening while in my mid-teens three decades ago. And I've been hooked ever since. Now, aside from being a foodie, hippie, hipster, film pundit, traveler, 80s enthusiast, self-proclaimed chef, and I do mean self-proclaimed chef, I'm also a homesteader, an urban homesteader. Now, most importantly, I'm a father, small business owner, organic gardener, and just too much more to name here. So welcome to my sustainable yet attainable home garden. Hey everybody, this is Tony with the Grounded Podcast, and today we're trying to uncover or debunk some vegan myths. And as I started my journey down veganism literally a little over 2 months ago, I came across a lot while doing my research to become a vegan. I came across some myths that I just found that just were no longer true, or they just never were true. They've just been passed down from person to person throughout the years, or they've been perpetuated by the media. And one of such things, which was one of the last myths that I actually believed myself, was that soy causes cancer. Now, soy is rich in photoestrogens, and that's a plant form of human estrogen. Now, because concerns were raised because of increased levels of estrogen, which had been linked to increased risks of developing breast cancer via soy consumption, people all of a sudden, they just started to panic. Some early studies in lab rats concluded that soy may increase the risk for some cancers like estrogen receptor positive breast cancer. But later studies showed that the way photoestrogens responded in rodents was very different than the way they interacted with humans. Now, there are different kinds of estrogen receptors in the human body. Some promote cell growth and others potentially act as tumor suppressors. But most studies now show that rodent and humans metabolize soy in different ways. And the same can be said for prostate cancer, although there is a higher risk for those with a history of prostate cancer within their family. So this is one of the first myths I wanted to really jump on and just completely debunk from beginning to end. So there's no longer a risk as far as a risk of developing cancer because of soy consumption. And a lot of people believe this because the vegan diet is, you know, soy is one of the cornerstones within the vegan diet. And because of tofu, or, you know, and it's not all 100% plant-based in that sense. And what I mean by that is that, you know, you're supplementing things like tofu and, you know, whatnot. So this was one of the last things that I actually believed. So I thought, hey, this would probably be the first thing that I approach and try to debunk. Okay, so another myth I ran across, which is probably one of the biggest myths that has been perpetuated by the media and just maybe people that have different interests at heart, is that you won't get enough B12. Okay, so there is a measure of truth within this myth. I know that's a little bit oxymoronic, but that's what makes this myth so dangerous. So you don't need to eat meat to get B12. B12 is in the soil, a bacteria in the soil. Animals graze on grass, take up that B12 bacteria. And going through some of my research for this myth, I found that home gardeners have higher levels of B12 because they're more likely to have soil on those homegrown veggies. Now, veggies found in your local grocer are more likely to be heavily washed and sanitized, something I've coined as the over-sanification of a nation, where we don't build up that natural bacteria in our gut, blah, blah, blah. You know, so I'm oversimplifying this a little bit, but that's the gist of it. Now, nutritional yeast or, you know, fortified cereals, tempeh, seaweed, spinach, beetroot, lentils, butternut squash, apples, potatoes, bananas, mushrooms, and blueberries, they all have a lot of B12, and the body takes up that B12 from these veggies and supplements in a very great and concentrated way. So for people to say that, oh, you can't have B12, or you can't get B12 from your veggies or being on a vegan or vegetarian diet, it just simply isn't true. Because we're eating these animals, right? If you're eating animals, saying that you're trying to get B12 and high volumes of B12, you're basically just eating the animals that are eating these plant diets. Because most animals, mammals that I'm going to be speaking of here shortly, are all basically vegetarian or vegan in nature. So this is just a myth that just simply isn't true. It may sound true, it's dressed up, and people have different motives for promoting the eating of meat or milk or other products, but it just simply isn't true. Okay, so another huge myth about vegans and just the history of vegans. This is a big one, and I'm going to really spend a lot of time on this one. And this is one that I did not know a lot about in general. And on its surface, it may seem like it's harmless, but it really hurts a lot. And it hurts a lot for the fact that it may alienate certain types of people, and it also may put labels, hurtful, destructive labels on a group of people who actually are empathetic and do have traveled the path of veganism because of their own ethical reasons. So it's that vegans are hippies and they're not people of color. So vegans and vegetarians are hippies by default. So there is some truth in this myth, at least the first part of this myth. Certainly not the second half, but more on that in a moment. So because vegans and vegetarians are, you know, ever since the 1960s, have been finding ways to become more politically active and truly believe in the things that they're fighting for, with animals and animal rights being at the forefront of that fight, they naturally fall into the hippie category. But that's primarily just for ethnical vegans and vegetarians. Now, here's a brief history of Black veganism. And this is something that is not talked about enough. So Black veganism is, in the U.S. is a social and political philosophy that connects the use of non-human animals with other social justice concerns such as racism and the lasting effects of slavery, such as the subsistence diets of enslaved people and the cultural food traditions involved. Now, the Cale sisters first proposed the intersectional framework for and coined the term Black veganism. Research has found that almost 8% of Black Americans are vegan or vegetarian compared to only about 3% of other Americans. So they are by far the fastest growing part of the vegan world, or those converting to veganism. Now, veganism as a modern movement historically was made up primarily of white people. Now, the modern Black veganism movement takes inspiration from Rastafarianism, which developed a plant-based diet known as Ital in Jamaica in the 1930s. In groups like the African Hebrew Israelites of Jerusalem, which has advocated strict veganism since the 1960s, and the Nation of Islam, which specifically connected choosing a plant-based diet to fighting racist oppression. Now, it also has roots in the American Civil Rights Movement. Dick Gregory, who marched with Martin Luther King, argued that because I'm a civil rights activist, I am also an animal rights activist. Animals and humans suffer and die alike. So in 2010, two influential books by Dr. A. Breeze Harper's Sister Vegan and McWhorter's By Any Greens Necessary were published. And in the anthology, Sister Vegan, the editor, also Dr. A. Breeze Harper, a prominent critical race feminist scholar, argued that veganism is a tool for combating environmental injustice, poor health, and internalized colonization. So in 2014, Bryant Terry wrote Afro-Vegan. So just seeing the two words on the book cover juxtapose disrupted everything the mainstream has ever shown about veganism. And in 2017, the Bleacher Report published a story about multiple Black NBA players having adopted a vegan diet. So there's a lot of veganism within the Black community. So veganism has been heavily embraced by the hip-hop community and culture since the late 2010s. And in health and wellness back in 2016, including a plant-based diet, was added as the 10th element of hip-hop. So just to finish up on the myth of vegans being just hippies and not really people of color, you know, Black vegans often face the exotification of their food and culture by vegan white communities and spaces that alienates those said Black people from participating in the larger vegan community overall. So I would say that because there's this kind of gatekeeping, exclusionary way of thinking and holding the reins on a particular part of the vegan community in general, this is what's slowing the growth of this movement overall. because the more people with different ideals, different cultures are included in any said movement and propelling that and moving it forward, will, as far as I can see, honestly, it will move it forward so much faster, and there will be so much progress to be made. In another area within the stratosphere of vegan myths that I found to be just a little bit comical, just when you really sit down and think about it, is that vegans are skinny, weak, and they just simply can't build muscle. Probably like most, when you hear the word vegan, the first thought or image that pops into your head is of a pale, weak, and feeble individual that's a tree-hugging, dirty hippie, right? You know, I mean, the mainstream media, along with a few elitist gatekeeping toxic vegans, have further perpetuated this myth. But an argument I would counter with this is that most mammals that just happen to be vegan by nature are some of the largest on the planet, not only in size, but in mass muscle. A prime example is the gorilla, a primate mammal that's a herbivore that's basically adapted to eat plants. The rhino is another example of a herbivore eating mainly vegetation. And then there's the elephant, the largest land mammal that also is a herbivore. I mean, gorillas can live 40 to 50 years in the wild or in captivity, a little bit longer in captivity. And then rhinos, 35 to 50 years, and elephants can live up to 70 years. I mean, there are so many examples of athletes, bodybuilders, etc., that are completely vegan, that are filled with muscles. So for us to say that we need these things in order to build muscle, to perform at our peak, it's just simply not true. And these are all, you know, in like the gorilla, for example, it's, you know, anatomically based on how they are designed and built, we're the closest thing to them, and we see how large and just filled with muscles, and we definitely wouldn't say that they are weak or feeble by any stretch of the imagination. So, you know, for me, it's like this is a prime example of this myth just simply not being true, and it's something, like I said, that has been perpetuated by the mainstream media and a few toxic vegans that, like I've said, are pretty much gatekeepers and trying to keep a certain segment of the population out and trying to keep this all for themselves. But anyway, these have been my thoughts on some of these myths, and shortly here we're going to dive into a conversation with Michelle, and we'll jump right into that. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for having you. So, who are you?
I'm Michelle.
You're Michelle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
I am in my 40s and I live in the beautiful Lowcountry of South Carolina. I've known you for a little while, and we have talked about lots of things that we have in common. which I'm sure we're going to cover here.
Oh, yeah, we're going to cover one big one. Yeah, a huge one about veganism.
I've heard of that. I've heard of that.
Yeah. It's a thing. It's really a thing.
Is it?
Yeah. Yeah.
I've heard that. I happen to be a vegan. It's true.
Oh, so how's that working for you?
You know, it isn't as hard as I was initially afraid it was going to be. It was a pretty easy transition.
Yeah.
And yeah. I don't really find that I miss a lot of my former life. When I'm talking about veganism as a lifestyle, it didn't really change that much for my life. So I find it to be fairly effortless. I know that's not the case for everyone, and I don't want to make it sound like it's just this inherently easy thing.
Right, right.
But all in all, I'm enjoying it, and I find it to be really rewarding.
So how did you start on this path, this journey?
Well, I didn't grow up in the South, which you may be able to tell by my lack of accent. I grew up in Oregon, and veganism isn't super new there. So it was definitely something that had always been on my radar. I knew of people with modified and plant-based diets from a very early age. It wasn't part of my life. My family definitely did not subscribe to that mentality, but it was something I was always aware of. So it's just existed as a normal option for me in my head. It didn't occur to me that that wasn't a normal thing until I moved to a place where maybe it's not so common.
Everything is deep fried.
That's good. Right. Well, now to be fair, you can be a deep fried vegan if that's what you want.
junk food vegan, something. Yeah.
Absolutely. If that's what you are looking for your life, there are options for you, my friend.
Okay. We're not going to dive too deeply into the whole vegan conversation, because that's definitely going to be another topic for another day. But what we're going to do tonight is we're going to just debunk a lot of the things about being a vegan or what there isn't out there, and just try to start there, just to, you know, a lot of the people aware of what it is or what it isn't, and some things that are, you know, either outright lies, misinformation, or whatever the case may be. So, you know, me, you know, okay, so the last couple of months, I have fully dived into being a vegan myself.
I heard that. How's it going?
Yeah, it's going pretty well. It's not as hard. Just, you know, like you, for me, my whole life, like for the most part, I've always been drawn more to vegetables and eating plant-based anyway. It's always been like this 80-20 thing, and like, what am I doing? I keep constantly going back and forth between, you know, eating no meat at all, or, you know, because I was vegetarian for a couple of years, and and my whole diet for the most part has just been mostly veggies, and it's just like, you know what, I just need to go ahead and just take the full complete jump. And I had some help from someone. I don't know who that is, but but it was like, oh, you know, I feel so much better. I have more energy. It's all these benefits that I'm already seeing. And, you know, before I started down this journey on, you know, being a vegan, I actually went to the doctor about 2 weeks before and went and had all these tests done and everything, and you know blood tests, and everything was great. It was where it should be. And I went back about 2 weeks ago, and I saw that my test came back even better. So it's like,
that's good.
Definitely going in the right direction, and it didn't affect anything, because that was one of the reasons, you know, why I did that, to make sure, okay, I'm doing the right thing, and, you know,
validation.
Yeah. Did my due diligence as far as, you know, researching and looking into it, and I'm still learning. We're always still learning, right?
Right.
Paths, and, you know, things may change here or there, but yeah, so did you like eating meat?
My mother will tell you, if you ask her, that I was a horrible child to feed. Yeah. And so growing up, when the family would make a run to McDonald's, it was the 80s, don't judge me.
during that time too, yeah.
My family was always frustrated when I wouldn't want a cheeseburger. I'd want one of their salads that came in the like slushy cup with the dome lid. I always wanted a salad instead. And I would have the stubborn streak argument after Sunday, you know, supper after church when they'd make a roast. And I'd sit at that table all day and refuse to swallow the meat that they made me take a bite of. Like, I would sit for 8 hours. No, I'm not swallowing this. You cannot make me. So I've always had a complicated relationship with meat. Right. And especially, hopefully my mom never hears this, but meat that's not prepared super well, you know, it gets a little dry. Oh. Or maybe a less quality cut is a little harder to enjoy. And so that was always not appealing to me as a kid, for sure. I mean, I definitely have grown and my palate expanded, but I did have issues with meat growing up.
Right, right. You know, I didn't have as much of an issue, but I did gravitate more towards plant-based. And of course, being in the South, it's a bit different. It's definitely a bit different. Now, I did have a lot of influences around me growing up, you know, having parents, one of which was from the North, New York, specifically. And I had a lot of influences, and I visit a lot of places growing up. And, you know, I've always had this kind of outside the box look at other cuisines, and especially like going to New York. And you know, I have a lot of experiences with different types of food. Like, I would see a lot of the Indian prepared dishes in the city, but at the same time, I would be sitting on a stoop and I would smell the lamb, you know, and all these smells coming out from food trucks or whatever it was. This mixture of worlds, and it just opened me up. It's like, oh, but I always have been drawn more towards this plant-based, because I just loved it. I mean, whenever we would go, like if we didn't have Sunday dinner prepared, like you were just speaking of, you know, at home, we would go after church services or whatever it was, and we would go directly to, say, Ryan's. I don't know if you know what Ryan's is.
No, I'm not familiar. Ryan's,
it was a huge buffet style place, mostly in the South for the most part. And, you know, you would go and you could just corral around this huge, you know, all meats and salads and desserts and everything on that one thing. You could go back as many times as you wanted. And, you know, of course, you always over ate, you know, when you went there.
I've heard that.
Yeah. And what I would always do is I would always start with this huge, humongous salad with everything just like pouring off of it. And I always started then. It's like, I like this. And it was, of course, it wasn't the best, you know, lettuce, you know, iceberg. Mm-mm. And there, you know, not the best lettuce, but, you know, but it was what they had there. But I loved it. I loved it. But anyway, I'm getting way off topic here talking about salads. I'm sorry. But anyway, I digress. But it was just so interesting just to see my take on the way I ate versus the way everybody else around me was eating. And it was like, we pork this and, you know, all these steaks and you have to eat this. And it was, of course, always the misconception of, oh, milk. You have to have milk with this every meal and blah, blah, blah. And that stuff, of course, was fed to us. And of course, all the commercials, you know, it's just like
the media plays a huge role in how you think about what you should and shouldn't be eating.
Exactly. Exactly. Huge role. It's complicated. So what are some of the myths you want to debunk? And we'll kind of like go back and forth and just talk about that a little bit.
All right. So one that kind of got me a little riled up the first time I heard it, because it feels absurd to me, because common sense tells me you can't possibly think this. But someone said, and I don't have like a source citation here, but right. and they said that they had a study that was done that vegans actually kill more animals than meat eaters do, because to plant crops you have to kill all these voles and mice and this and that and the other thing. So I think the implication is that farming and mass producing large amounts of grains specifically takes the life of more tiny mammals than farming for cattle exclusively ever could. And obviously the one big red flag for me is that clearly everybody who's saying that knows that most of that grain production, something like 75%, don't quote me on that, it's just a remembrance and I could be off on my numbers, but that 75% of grain production, especially in the Northern Hemisphere, is put towards producing ruminants for human consumption. And so a lot of that grain that's planted is to grow meat. It's just going through a cow first. Right. And so, one, if it was true that farming did inherently take a lot of lives from smaller mammals, especially rodents, that sort of thing, that cost also gets transferred to what is eating that grain if it's going to be consumed later. So I think that it's pretty silly to say that vegans are causing that, because we are not consuming all of that grain that is being produced. That's crazy. But on top of that, you're talking about mass farming operations. If you're talking about just tilling under soil like that. And I also try to be conscientious about, and I think a lot of vegans probably have a similar mindset, and that's just a speculation, but that you're trying to buy food that's sourced locally, that's been grown well, that is not using mass farming, you know, production techniques as much as possible. You know, so yes, there are farming practices that probably do cost a lot of rodents and small mammals their lives. However, a lot of that food that's being grown isn't for us. And then on top of that, when you're trying to live sustainably and you're trying to make these lifestyle changes, you're probably not purchasing as much of that corn as they are accusing us of buying. So
yeah.
And you've heard that myth. I mean,
of course, over and over and over again. Yeah, that was one of the more prevalent ones I've heard over the years. And yeah,
I have a hard time believing that people are saying that with a straight face. Like, that's got to be a joke, right?
Yeah. Well, it goes right back to what I was, you know, saying at the top, just kind of like some of the misinformation out there. And it's like, and then when someone hears it, they repeat it to someone else. And it's
right.
Like, you know, the whole phone call thing, you say one thing at the end and it
completely
changes. Or it's like, it keeps going on in that same direction. And it's that doesn't sound. No one's ever questioned this. It's like when you're being conned by a con man. It's like everyone in this whole pyramid thing knew that it just wasn't quite right. But no
the emperor's not wearing any clothes, right?
Right. No one ever stopped and said, hey, wait a minute. Let's look at this for a minute and see if this is actually true.
What do they think their cows are eating?
Right.
Grass in some happy field on a mountainside?
Right, all day.
No.
It's not true. So do you ever miss eating meat? Like, I mean, just like sometimes you just smell, or is it just the smell is repulsive to you now? I mean, is it?
So, I mean, it wasn't. My decision to remove meat from my life wasn't exclusively based on I don't like meat. I mean, of course, an amazing, you know, beautifully prepared steak is truly an enjoyable experience. However, there was a lot more that went into that decision than just taste.
Yeah.
And so is it the same? The identical, I can't tell the difference, to saute up some tofu or some mushrooms or some whatever. No, it absolutely is not the same thing, but my expectations aren't the same. It can be a fulfilling culinary experience. I enjoy the process of preparation. I enjoy a beautiful combination of flavors, a creative dish not meant to replace a meat-based dish that I used to love, but instead a dish that I enjoy exclusively on its own because its flavors work well together, or because it feels comforting. I eat for comfort a lot, or because it's seasonal and it tastes so amazing when you eat it in season. Right. And so, yes,
I've been telling that for years. Yeah,
of course I miss meat on occasion, but when I made that decision, I didn't make it lightly. And I do believe that there is an ethical element of it for me. And so I can't justify wanting to love and protect and take care of all the animals. You may not know this, but I am a bleeding heart. And if any sad little animal needs to be loved and taken care of, I am your sanctuary, my friend. Come in.
Right.
I will take care of you. I genuinely have a love for animals, and they bring me joy, and I feel companionship for them. And I think there's something going on inside of them that is more than a hamburger waiting to be made. Like I always say, cows have best friends. It's true. Just look it up. That they can literally remember another cow even 20 years later. And so a lot of experiences in my life led me to a place where if I can do better, I should do better. And one of the things that I think I can do better is if I'm going to protect animals, or I'm going to feel protective about the way that animals should be treated, the first step in that is to stop putting them in my mouth. And so that wasn't a tough choice for me. And so, yeah, I miss it. But what I feel good about eating an animal now, no, I wouldn't. And especially if it was an animal that wasn't raised well, it was mistreated, or it never had any joy in its life. It was literally just a hamburger waiting to be made. Like that weighs heavy on me. And so, no, I don't miss it enough to go back to it. I'll put it that way.
Gotcha. Yeah. So having brought that up, you know, there are certain types of vegans out there, right?
Right.
We've had conversations about this in the past, you know, whether it's ethical or, you know, because of sustainable practices, you want
to practice
that, or religion. And there's just all these different things that play into that. Which one of those would you say you're more aligned with? I mean, I know that, you know, some of those probably cross over into.
Right. And so for me, a lot of those things kind of overlap.
Yeah.
And for health reasons for other people in my family, and health reasons for myself, there is definitely an element to that. And then for the ethical treatment of animals, that's a factor. And then also a large part of my choice was more about my own personal carbon footprint and the amount of fresh water that me and my family consume. And so when I was truly considering working on my carbon footprint and my water consumption, our fresh water consumption as a family, I kept finding the number one way to make those numbers a lot smaller was removing beef first.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the more you look at it, it really does impact the planet more drastically than I think a lot of people consider, and maybe have never considered. And so that is a multifaceted, the choice to become vegan just kept checking more boxes off. Ethical, check. Makes my family feel healthier, check. Makes my impact on the planet lower, check. But that being said, I do think that it kind of also brings up another myth that maybe people don't consider a myth, but that either you're all vegan or you're nothing. And so
right.
It doesn't have to be a militant scary experience where, dear God, you consumed honey, you're out of the club, I'm going to throw blood on you or whatever. I think that you need to make the choices about your journey to veganism or vegetarianism or maybe pescatarian or whatever it is that you're walking towards.
Yeah.
You need to take each of those steps and evaluate whether this moves towards your goals, whether it works for you, whether it works for your family, whether it causes some great hardship or not. And when it is the right choice, then take that step. Absolutely. I'm not saying only when it's easy, take that step, but But I do think that you can be taking steps towards reducing your water footprint and your carbon footprint and ethically raised animals. You know, like you can do things that are right choices, and maybe you're not 100% ready to be vegan, and that's fine. Every step towards being better for yourself and for your planet and for your family and for your health, those are all good things. And I don't think we should gatekeep either you're a perfect vegan and you're not, or you're not welcome.
Right.
I think we all need to just encourage each other. Somebody actually texted me the other day and asked me if I wouldn't mind sharing some vegan recipes with her because she was really interested in giving it a try. And I was really surprised. And she was like, I don't know if I can do it. And I was like, just take baby steps. Like I started for years with Meatless Monday.
Right.
And that makes a difference.
Yeah, I did that too. Yeah, so many years. And, you know, and it's like, well, let's let you know. And then I really found myself over the last 10 years, just only eating meat maybe once or maybe twice a week. Up until the last couple of months. And even before that, I really started to slowly stop even that much. So it was like, I might as well just go ahead and just cut out, you know, all of dairy as well, because it's not doing my digestive system any justice, you know.
Weird. You're not designed to consume cow milk. At 43, I just don't know that I want to be a 2,000 pound cow.
right. Yeah. That doesn't sound logical, does it? At all.
Mm-mm. No. Yeah. But I thought I needed that to be healthy. And
of course, because
that was something I genuinely believed. And I was like, oh no.
Yeah.
Poor brittle bones. What's going to happen?
I'm going to fall down and get osteoporosis. And
I actually was diagnosed with osteoporosis long before I ever gave up dairy. So
there you go.
It didn't save me.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of it is genetic too. I found. Yeah.
Right. But, you know, I think that everybody was trying their best at one point. And I think that consuming dairy as a child is probably a little more normal, and that it's not entirely based on fantasy that calcium is good for your bones. It just may be that there are other options, and we may have been misled about that. You know, not that everybody's trying to ruin our life.
I've been talking about that for years. Like, as far as what we say we need from meat or dairy products, we can get plant-based, like basically everything, you know, as far as like calcium, just talking about calcium alone, you can get from any of the leafy greens. I mean, you know, that's
right. Well, because all that calcium on the planet that exists within animals was put there by plants, you know, they ate.
Right.
So,
yep. Same thing. And that's, you know, I'm going to kind of like segue a little bit into one of my, you know, one of the myths I really wanted to bunk, and that's the B12, that vegan B12. And I was like, when I was looking at that, and when you said that, it's like, yes, that's the main thing. It's like, we don't need to eat the animals, you know, to get the B12. And and because we're soaking that up, we're actually getting that from the plants that they are eating. So it's not just cut out the animal and eat the actual plant. You're getting it in dense, you know, and it's processing better, I think. You know.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but B12 is a mineral or a nutrient that comes directly from the soil. And so,
And that's
so when we, when we changed the way that we ate and we stopped bringing food in from the garden and we had to start worrying about things like E. coli because of the way we were fertilizing, you know, lettuce or whatever. So we have to super wash it. And that's important. I don't want anybody to go out and get E. coli. That's not what I'm saying.
What
I'm saying is we started washing B12 off of the plants we were eating because we needed to farm more.
Yeah.
You know, we all stopped getting enough B12. And that wasn't something just plant-powered people were facing. That's something everybody is facing. And so all of those people who are also eating meat are also eating fortified foods to get enough B12. And so, yeah, we have to use fortified foods. And for me, that's nutritional yeast. I get the fortified kind. And I love nutritional yeast. I think it's a great addition to a lot of meals.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
so there is no shortage of B12 in my life. Plus the bread I buy at the grocery store has it, and cereal has it, and you know, so I'm definitely not short on it.
Yep. And just as an aside, just talking about that,
mm-hmm.
gardeners are more likely to have more B12
nice.
In their diet because they have home gardens and
they're right.
less likely to rinse all of that soil,
right?
The produce that they're bringing right in.
Because you eat it right out of the garden sometimes.
Right out of the garden.
I know you do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I do. Sometimes I'm sitting out there and I'm just like, you know, carrots are coming up and I'm, you know, I may like brush it off. And I'm just, you know, you get that little gritty, but you get used to that for a while, right? You know, or snow peas. Oh, my God. Yeah. Snow peas. That's what I'm thinking. Snow or snap peas. Oh, sometimes I'll take a little bowl out there with me. They won't make it into the house or the kids.
Why do you need the bowl? You don't need the bowl.
I don't even need the bowl. It's like, why am I even fooling myself? It's sad. The kids are sitting there. I saw one of my kids because I was picking some snow peas the other day, and my youngest, he was just sitting there looking at me, and there's that old saying, you know, more is caught than taught sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
He was sitting there just looking at me.
Mm-hmm.
And because he saw me, I was eating right off of the vine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, huh. And he was taking that in. And then a day or two later, he comes up and he's like, oh, can I eat this? Can I eat this? Like, no,
mm-hmm.
we can eat this and we can eat, you know, these certain things, but
mm-hmm.
you know, and he's like, he's interested in even my
yeah.
even my youngest daughter, she came and she was like, I think I want to be an urban farmer when I grow up. And I was like, I was like,
yeah.
you know, and she was just Mom. Sitting there, she was like, interesting, like, can I help you? Because I was moving mm-hmm. some of the I was thinning out some of my okra seeds in the
mm-hmm.
the garden. And like, can I help? I was like, yeah, we're going to pick this one and we're going to pick this one out and we're going to thin it out. And, you know, so that
mm-hmm.
they get all the nutrients that they need so that when they get big, we can actually eat. You know, I have all these rare heirloom varieties. Anyway, everybody's already heard
mm-hmm.
all the stories and everything. So I'm not going to dive too deeply into that because we got a lot of stuff here. but
I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Right. Right. But it was just so fun just seeing their face and
mm-hmm.
the wheels turning and you can see okay. the eyes lighting up and it's like
mm-hmm.
oh, this
absolutely
is. And it's like I don't think they realize how much they enjoy a lot of these things when
mm-hmm.
they're outside, when they're away from whatever media and things like that, and it's like I'm trying to slowly but surely less and less of that and more of this, and slowly, you know, get them fully
right.
integrated into the garden. And that's, you know, and that's a part. And you know, most of my children, they really love to eat veggies, and it's never been really an issue because I never made it to where it was an option. It's like they were smaller and
mm-hmm.
and they like certain things more than others,
right?
You know, and I'm like, okay, well, you know, I'm not gonna, you know, say that you should eat this and you have to eat this because they're in your plate. No, it's like, which of these veggies would you like? And you have that
right.
choice and you have that license over what you choose, you know, to eat in this particular.
Same. Although I do want them to try new ones. And if
Walmart is introducing. Fine. Right. I know you really don't like this. Like, I know you really don't like turmeric. You know, you're not going to sit there and eat turmeric root, right? You're not going to do that. But
well, I mean, maybe.
Maybe. I don't know. I know I go out and my mint is always gone. It's always gone.
Everybody likes mint.
I'm like, what are you doing? All my mint is gone. And I'm like, okay, all right. So I'm trimming back. And yeah, like, why don't you eat the rosemary like that? Oh, it's got such a strong taste. Okay. Anyway, let's jump back into some another myth. One of your myths that you wanted to debunk here.
Mine. Let's see. So mine is less of a generic myth that applies to everybody, more for our Southern Bible Belt listeners that, an argument that I have had with my family, because I come from a conservative, more Christian-based family, that I am being disobedient to my biblical roots by not eating meat. And that I was called by God Almighty to exert dominance over the whole planet as a human being. And that I am meant as a higher being. This was the argument that I heard, that I am meant to consume animals because God gave them to us. To I guess, in my understanding, steward, you know.
Yeah.
And I never considered stewardship of something means you have to consume it. I always kind of felt like leadership kind of falls into two categories, that either leadership means to you are being rewarded and all of the spoils should come to you, or leadership means that it's your job to take care of everything underneath you and you have to serve.
Right, yeah.
You have to serve your constituents with care. And I tend to fall under the second one. And I learned servant leadership in the military. I learned it in the church. I really do feel like servant leadership is primary to who I am. However, I don't think that my call from God that I grew up with to be a steward over the earth, which, you know, isn't obviously going to apply to everybody, but it is an argument you may have to encounter if you're dealing with this, you know. But I'm not called to eat the animals, because the Bible's pretty specific that you're not meant to eat certain animals, shellfish and pork especially, or that you're not meant to consume them in certain combinations, because honestly, I think that there was some indication back in the time that was written that it may not be healthy to consume those things, that it's harder to predict when you would become sick from eating those. And so, I mean, it's clear to me in that religious text, and probably in other religious texts around the world, that food restrictions are probably meant and put in place to protect the bodies of the believers in those religions, you know. And it's not, I don't feel compelled to consume everything on the planet to be the boss, if that makes sense. Like, I think it's our job to make sure species stop going extinct and we stop producing greenhouse gases in such, you know, quantities. We're changing the temperature of the planet or things like that. So I do think that being a vegan is a good example, and probably being a vegetarian and being, you know, a conscientious meat eater, you know, that you're doing a better job of ensuring that the planet we leave to the subsequent generations is a better planet. And that feels more in line with a lot of religious intent, if not the exact wording of the different scripts, you know, that we leave a legacy that is beautiful for generations to come and healthy and worthy.
Yeah.
So that was definitely one that I have dealt with personally that maybe not everybody sees, but there is some religious controversy behind not eating the beef.
I think that a lot of people that are relying on that train of thought, what you're talking about, they haven't read where God specifically said, okay, the vegetation of the ground, and that's at the beginning of Genesis.
Mm-hmm.
This is to serve as food for you.
Mm-hmm.
All the seed bearing, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
It was right there at the beginning. So if you're going to go by that,
right,
it was at the very beginning for a reason, right?
Right.
President of all these other things that
we're going to talk about.
And I think it was in Leviticus, basically all through Leviticus. Not to get biblical here, but it was just that whole book was basically things we shouldn't do as far as sanitation,
right,
eating, and it was like
rules,
groundwork. And it's like, I don't know, it makes sense to me. And it's like, and that was shortly after, because I think where a lot of people are getting a lot of that from, and I've talked to a lot of religious leaders about this particular topic, and from what they have said is that right after Noah came off the ark, God said, you can eat this. But that was for a targeted short period of time, and then that completely go away. You better realize if you are, a believer and you're willing to believe, these stories, you would realize, hey, wait a minute. If they just came out of the ark and the whole planet was flooded, let's just say that.
Right.
When certain regions of the planet were flooded, there was no vegetation on the earth to eat.
Right.
So that was to serve as food for a short period of time, and then you go back to that original, command to eat vegetation, seed bearing. So I think that's missing in, when people are having those conversations.
Context, right?
Yeah.
And I also think that we've gone full swing in the other direction, where it must have this many ounces of steak per week. Or I don't know, manly enough, or I'm not strong enough, or I'm not, American enough. I mean, there's a lot of that mentality, again, when you look at things like the media, and it's hard to know what of those apply to you, or should apply to you, or shouldn't apply to you, or to not have feelings about that. So, that we have this, I don't know, God-given right to eat the animals, or we have this American right to eat the meat. It's complicated, because I don't feel like those things are true. And that's less of a fact and more of a mentality.
That's one that irks me too.
Mm-hmm.
You got anything else?
I really had only a few, because I know that you have done a little more.
Well, I've dived into a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, I've already talked about a little bit of it. And if at the beginning of the episode, you'll hear a lot of it. just the history. But there are a few things, and you did mention and touch on a few of them. And but one of the ones I really wanted to talk about was that soy causes cancer. Now, the reason why this is one of the first ones for me outside of the B12, which we already talked about that. I dived into a little bit in another segment, but the soy causes cancer, just the not understanding that and how the science behind that has changed since that first came out. And honestly, this was one of the last myths that I actually still believed, because I didn't know that there was new science that came out behind that and how that had changed. And because of having the risk of cancer in my family, in the history of it, I was really looking at that, and I was like, well, I probably might want to stay away from that a little bit, so that was my whole train of thought, and not just diving into that. But that was, for me, was one of the things that was like, okay, I let me start looking more into these things that we perceive to be true.
Right. Well, it's funny because these same people that say, poo-poo, I can't eat soy, it causes cancer, or it makes me grow man boobs, or, you know, whatever, their argument against soy as an ingredient is, these are the same people that are using recipes where they are literally consuming level one carcinogens in their diet on a regular basis, which are known to cause cancer, like cigarettes are a level one carcinogen in the World Health Organization, and processed meats are a level one carcinogen, according to the World Health Organization. So you can't eat pepperoni pizza or, you know, sliced turkey deli meat and with impunity and then say that this plant you won't consume because it might cause cancer, but you're eating something that we literally know causes cancer. And so I'm not saying one is exclusive to the other. Not only is their fact, you know, wrong, but then they're also living this lifestyle where they're consuming things that they know cause cancer. And so that's complicated. You know, you're getting this information out there that this thing is healthy or that thing is healthy, and you're accepting that as fact. And that's, again, that whole problem with just accepting everything you hear and not doing any research on your own to see if maybe that wasn't a credible source, or maybe that was an old study, or maybe that was influenced by somebody who was going to make money from that thing not being eaten, you know, which is complicated. And you have to be willing to look for the truth, take everything with a grain of salt. And I'm not saying you have to question every single thing, but definitely take a minute and run it through Snopes or, you know.
Yeah.
That's, just a little.
Yeah. Okay, so another one I wanted to jump onto and just like really, you know, and I talked about this in depth and just the whole conversation about this is vegans are hippies and they're not people of color, which could be further from the truth. Right. And I dive into this whole history behind it. I'm not going to repeat all of that now here. It's already going to be, you know, but it was just so interesting just to know that Black people are actually the fastest growing group of vegetarians and vegans, more so vegans and vegetarians, because one usually goes right over into the other. And I've noticed that within my own family, you know, I'm the fourth vegan in my family now. And I'm like, wow. And then you look back at history and it's just this whole gatekeepy thing that's kind of weird.
I think that the gatekeepy piece can be, I think, maybe external, because I don't think it was always like that. Hippies historically have been very welcoming to everybody, Tony. I think that the perception that it's something hippies do or would do might create a gate for some people. And I don't think it's true that just hippies would be vegan, but I can see why people would have that kind of feel about it. They definitely kind of give me,
they probably were more politically,
involved in California, Oregon, historically super liberal places, which I think everybody needs to recognize, just because it seems like they're liberal, that there's nobody that's conservative there, and that's just not the truth. And so they're experiencing this view from the outside, you know, these people only eat carrots, oh no, you know. And so I think that it's something that has kept people away from it, and it wasn't necessarily something that was being spread by vegans themselves, that they're all hippies or they're this or they're that. I mean, a lot of the wasn't Steve Jobs a fruitarian? That's vegan if I've ever heard of it. You know, so I mean, there are people who obviously, I mean, the myths about hippies, you know, don't bathe, live in vans,
dirty hippie,
you know, whatever. you know, aren't successful people, don't have jobs, that sort of thing. And that's obviously not true. We're all smart enough to realize that that's just, you know, hyperbole. It's all some, we like to make fun of people that are other than us. And that's an easy one to throw. The Manson family really screwed it up for a lot of us hippies, man. Not really a hippie, but, you know, it feels like I am when I live in a place like the South, and I make so many choices that are contrary to what's popular. But, I mean, if that's the worst insult they can throw at me, all right, I love peace. Man, do I suck.
I'll take it. I'll tell you that. And that, in certain segments of certain communities, it's still taboo.
Right.
You know, you'll still hear the, oh, you're eating that, you know, rabbit food, and, you know, and just little digs like that, or, you know, or you try to order something off of a menu from a restaurant and they don't have anything whatsoever to accommodate you.
Right.
And you're like, oh, okay, I need to leave. You know, it just.
Right. Like, I'll have a beverage while you eat.
I'll have some water, I guess. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah, so that's...
Is your iced tea vegan? Right. Yeah, no, that's true.
So another area I really wanted to jump into, and this is one of my final, you know, myths I wanted to kind of like just bust wide open and just talk about a little bit, is the whole vegans are skinny, weak, and they just simply can't build muscle.
Right.
You know, and one of the things I talked about, and this was one of the things I talked about before we jumped on here, was that okay, you look at all the mammals that are herbivores, and they're some of the hugest.
Bison,
right?
That's water buffalo, and like,
about gorillas, animals. You name it. I mean, gorillas or rhinos, I mean, just you go down the list, and for the most part they're doing pretty well, and they're pretty big, you know. I mean, you know,
and they don't eat burgers.
Right.
Okay. Can I just tell you, from when I did eat meat, predators tasted bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bear, not my favorite.
So what, so which predator are you talking about here? Because I'm just trying to die.
I definitely have eaten dog, but that was out of the country. And, and I have eaten a lot of fish, which a lot of fish are predators. And I have eaten bear. And it wasn't good. I didn't enjoy it. And there are a lot
Yeah, I tried bear about 4 years ago up in
North
Carolina. Oh my
god. Oh, greasy. Not great.
So greasy, and just it doesn't store well. It's so bad. So
and
bad.
Now a lot of birds, and people would probably at me here, but a lot of birds are truly a lot more predatory than people give them credit for. Chickens, super, super predators. Those things hunting look like Tyrannosaurus in a pack. And
Tyrannosaurus,
I like chicken, but
you
know, I didn't, I don't miss it. And I had a giant flock of chickens. And I was too attached.
I had some too. I had some too.
Yeah. So, I mean, I just think that, if you're looking at the biggest, strongest animals on the planet, and by that, I mean strong, like capable of doing a lot of work. A lot of predators are fast for a minute, but they burn out really fast because you can't get a lot of sustained energy from, you know, your reserves if all you're eating is meat. Right. And that's your big cats. They sleep, 95% of the day? You know, or, you know, look at a cheetah. They may be the fastest animal on the planet, but how long can they sustain that? But then
think about a horse.
Right, but then think about a horse.
Yep.
Who eats, I don't know, hay, alfalfa, what do they eat? Definitely plant eaters, but they can run for a really, really, really long time. And so, and when you think about, well, some of the laziest plant eaters, you know, sloths or koalas, something like that, they're going to be stationary and they're going to spend a lot of their time eating because the plants they choose to eat are not super nutrient dense. But they can still be out and about and moving as much as they need to. You know, they make it work for their environment. So, I mean, I certainly have no, I have limits. But I did find when I turned to veganism a couple years ago, my energy levels really did go up, 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 up.
Yeah, I've noticed a big difference just over the last 2.5 months.
Right.
And
I'm a martial artist, and I have no problem keeping up in class, or, you know, I do a HIIT class, and I don't have any problem keeping up there. And I haven't had any trouble building muscle, for sure. And there was also a documentary on Netflix called Game Changers, and that was about elite athletes who are all plant-powered. And that was a really interesting look. And, of course, that's not going to apply to every single person on the planet, because those are some really extreme athletes. But the data is pretty interesting. I'm looking at people that are some of the strongest people on the planet, or some of the people that can run the longest, you know, ultra marathoners and that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's a super interesting study on, being plant powered doesn't really seem to have impacted these athletes in a negative way. And it was an interesting exercise that's worth considering, you know.
The NBA and the NFL, you have so many players that are converting over, like literally every week. It's unbelievable how many, and they even have some of the coaches pushing a lot of these diets because they're seeing that they're running faster, they have endurance, and it's just, you know, it's just overall positive. It's all positive. It's no downside of any of it,
right?
And it's like, well, yeah, if you can have these people that are already gifted, you know, sports, and then you put this on top of it.
Give them the extra edge, then we are going
to having to take, you know, any you know, drugs.
Well, I think in a lot of cases the drugs are illegal because I think everybody knows they're just not very safe in the long run, and they impact your body in a really negative way. Veganism doesn't have that same lasting impact where your body stops producing certain hormones, or you start having heart problems or cognitive issues. You know, there's
the brain fog and all of anything, and like I said, a lot of that I can see a lot of that has started to lift, and like I said, the energy level, like when I get up in the morning and throughout the day, I don't really have that lag. Like I know a lot of people, they have that lag around between 1 and 3 o'clock, where, you know, it's
which is why siestas are a thing. I hear.
I am, it's in my DNA to be a napper.
You're a napper.
Yeah, I'm a napper.
Must be nice.
Oh, believe me, I crawl up into my van and I'm just like, yes, just 20 minutes. This is all I need to recharge myself for the next 10 hours, maybe. Because it goes my time in there, you know, it goes on and on. All right, so I got a couple of questions from some listeners, and one or two of them we've already touched on, and one of which was, and this is the question, is it okay for vegans to eat honey?
You know, that one was one that I really struggled with. I mean, that and leather and other things like that. You know, what happens when I already have things in my life that aren't necessarily vegan friendly? You know, I really struggled with that. And so I really did research the honey thing. And I went to an apiary where they raise bees. And I have a family, a relative that also raises bees. And I asked them the tough question: is using bee products good for bees or bad for bees? Does it hurt them? Are they ever going to starve to death? Like, tell me what happens if I don't take the honey. And most of the time, if honey isn't being harvested from a hive, eventually the hive fills up and the bees leave and they go start a new one.
Yeah, and that's more work for them, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, there's that, but there's also they are producing way, way, way more than they're going to need, mm-hmm. especially someplace warm like South Carolina or Georgia. You know, their winters are not as harsh, so they are not going to need nearly as much honey. But they don't know that they're going to make the exact same amount always.
Right.
And they made a point of saying that by purchasing locally grown honey from local apiaries, you are financially supporting essentially the salvation of bees because they do struggle and they're working against all odds to make it one more generation, you know, with pesticides against them and urban sprawl. It's become increasingly challenging for a lot of colonies of bees to continue survival. And so by supporting local honey, especially, and I'm saying that, I'm not saying you can't buy mass produced honey because I'm sure those bees are also alive.
Right, right.
But
I do the local honey. Yeah, that's definitely a thing.
But the benefits of local are twofold. They help you and they help the hive or the apiary or the beekeeper financially. And but also by harvesting from local plants, you, I hear this happens anyway, you're being exposed to pollens that are local to your area. And by consuming that, it's supposed to reduce your allergic reaction if you have any issues with that. So I actually,
I attest to that. Yeah.
Yeah. I actually use bee pollen and local honey pretty regularly. And I like to use honey versus, you know, a straight processed white sugar,
right,
just because I think it's more nutritionally complex.
It is.
And so that's something I like to incorporate into my life. But I say, go for it. Use honey if you feel good about it. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're out there and using honey feels unethical to you, and you don't want to use beeswax and you don't want to use honey and you don't want to, then that's awesome. And I support really? Your journey. And
yeah.
It's not where I've landed, but mm-hmm. I can see why you would feel that way. And I respect that you respect the lives of the bees and that you want what's best for them and that you think that honey production's not it. But in my research, I went the other way. And I think that honey is
okay. Yeah. I've gone down that road too, and I've come to almost a similar conclusion. Yeah. That's if it doesn't hurt and it, you know, and it's helping mm-hmm. some way, whether it's helping you,
mm-hmm.
it's helping them, you know,
mm-hmm.
have so much honey in their hive, you know.
Well, they're not going to use it, so it's not
exactly. Yeah,
and we need bees, I hear, Tony.
Yeah, I know. That's why I have the pollinator garden, and I'm trying to do all mm-hmm. things to help them out. And when I see them roaming around, I absolutely love it.
Do you leave some fresh water out for them to drink with safety stops for them to pop onto?
Yes, everything. It's all laid out. Gotta
good.
Love it. All right, I'm going to jump into the next question.
We
talked about this a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't answer it, but you did. So I'm going to answer it right off the bat, and then this kind of mm-hmm. refer it back to you.
Yeah.
Okay, so is it? No, that's not the one. Okay. What type of vegan are you? So I know, you know, we talked about, you know, the
mm-hmm.
ethical, you know,
mm-hmm.
environmental, health conscious, and the religious.
Mm-hmm.
I would probably say I fall into two of those categories more so than the other two,
mm-hmm.
which is the health conscious first and foremost, probably before
right.
anything else, and then the environmental vegan. And mm-hmm. you know, so many different, you know, because it's like if you don't have the health, you know, it leads to this and that, and then the environment, it's like, well, that's another big thing. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Because if you're not taking care of those two things,
right?
Everyone's not taking care of those two things, and nothing else really matters because everything
right.
collapses. And you know, ethical. You know, I am to an extent, but
mm-hmm.
it's like I said, it's more so those first two I you know talked right. about than the you know that, and definitely not the religious. I've been down that road. not traveling it again, but
right, but yes.
For those that are, and you know, more power to you.
Yeah, if that's good for your journey, then I'm glad that you have that. You know.
Yeah.
And if you need help to get out, just blink twice.
Right.
No.
Right.
I can't see you blinking. Don't do that.
No, 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 that's not good. Okay. Let's see. Here's one. Okay. So, what are a few things within the vegan community that really bug you?
Interesting. You know what bugs me the most, and it's probably not something I'll ever be able to do anything about, but that if I want to go to a grocery store and buy something convenient, I work long hours, and sometimes I just want to come home and put something in the oven and not have to chop, chop, chop and saute. I will, but sometimes you want a break. I am always so bummed out that I feel like the vegan options cost so much more.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm always like, man, I'm doing the right thing. It's just so. And then, you know, when you start worrying about other things, because my journey took me down a path where I also worry about other, you know, ingredients. And so palm oil. And so like, I'm looking for things that, you know, meet all these health conscious, ethical, blah, blah, blah. It gets really expensive. And so, I mean, it means that I have to cook most of the time, and that's fine. It's a minor inconvenience, but that's one thing that bugs me. Is that, sorry, a frog just hopped across my room and landed on my wall.
So, I'm not editing this. Just to let you know.
Oh, pickles. So that's one thing that really bugs me. And I know that it's probably more expensive to make, but man, I feel like I'm doing the right thing. Can't I just have a cheaper?
I totally agree with that. Yeah. Yeah. And you can't always meal plan for the entire week or for
right.
You know, it's sometimes you just can't do it. You just can't.
Yeah.
There's so many different things that you have, moving parts within life, you just can't get. Yep. You just have to go for that convenience.
Convenience food is just part of life when you're a parent.
And anyone that's saying it's not, they're just lying. they're just lying.
They have a really different life than I do. Good for you, but man,
right.
What I do.
It's like, yeah, I'm pretty sure you know, if that's not an issue for you, you probably have someone cooking it for you, or
or you work less hours than I do, or...
exactly yeah. Okay, so I'm gonna get to the last question here before we start to wrap up. So what is the hardest thing you found about converting over to veganism?
Nothing about the food part was hard for me. The thing that's the hardest, and this is a me problem, but is that I am worried about the way people will perceive me if they find out that I'm vegan, that they will like me less, that they will think I'm persnickety, that they will think I'm a hippie, that they will think I am weak or I'm starving my children.
Mm-hmm.
All of these things that are myths, people genuinely believe about vegans.
Oh, and the media's done a great job in just...
Yeah.
Betrayed.
And that bums me out, hardcore, man. I'm going to be totally hippie if I can. You know, that I don't judge people for eating meat. You know, it'd be cool if they wouldn't think less of me because I don't.
Right. It's just a choice, and you're eating, and who's it hurting?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think for me, okay, so it's not something that I've actually dealt with yet.
Yeah.
But I'm looking forward to later on this year, and going up to the holiday season.
Sure.
Trying to change all of these recipes that I've been doing ever since the passing of my mother, because she passed all of these recipes to me. Trying to do those justice and looking at those and trying to prepare them in a way that doesn't...
honors
her.
Well, and I think we all need to recognize and accept that food is a lot more than fuel for some people. And for all of us, I think it should be.
Yeah.
It's part of community, and it's part of socialization, and it's part of happiness, and it's part of our memories. And it's complicated when you lived your whole life with one kind of food, and now you feel like you have to give up those memories or those feelings or that socialization or whatever, because you've chosen to stop consuming
one
food.
So and they always say smells and foods are two things that are associated with memory, and usually they are together.
Yeah.
You have this certain smell during a certain time of year, and or this, that, or the other. It's really, really hard to, I've said it before in the past. A lot of people that listen to the show, they know that I grew up not celebrating a lot of the holidays. If I did, it was with other family members or whatnot. Mm-hmm. So, and one of the few things that we did do was the Thanksgiving, and then I found out the history behind that.
Right.
And that's a whole nother topic. I covered that
a
little bit in past episodes, just to
all the topics tonight, Tony.
They're gonna be some fun topics, in the future. But that for me, it's like I'm looking at, I'm trying to, okay, how can can I switch out this ingredient and do this and get the vegan butter with this, and just up all these things. And I'm going to be like probably 2-3 months going up into, the holiday season. I'm going to be testing out things and seeing, and, with family members and dropping off pies here and there. Hey, I got your pie, and not telling them it's vegan.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So, just trying to trick them.
You can eat vegan food if you're not vegan. It's okay.
Right. And I so when those holiday season, that time comes back around, and I'm introducing these same exact things, and they don't see any difference. It's like, yes, that's a win. This is a win.
That's a win.
Yeah. There's these little things. So
I've had a few of those holiday meals as a vegan now, and it is hard and it is scary, but you can do it.
Yeah. Especially when you have someone preparing it for you. Especially for your first, there's some kind of realization there somewhere. That was a little bit of a clue.
I see.
We'll talk about that on the next episode. Anyway, this has been a wonderful conversation. We're definitely gonna jump back onto this topic later on, and because I really want to keep, nailing away at this a little bit at a time, just a little small bite size.
Is this going to be a two-parter, Tony?
No. It's going to be a longer episode, but it's definitely, it's the premiere episode for the new season. I haven't done an episode of the Grounded Podcast in last year this time. Yeah, it was the last time I did an episode, because I kind of switched things around a little bit.
Sure.
But anyway, anything else you want to say, Ray, rant about?
I'm sorry, allergies. No, it was just nice talking to you and unofficially meeting the audience. I had a lot of fun.
It's going to be more Michelle, more Michelle.
Oh, good.
Yes. She's here to stay, folks. I'm sorry. Not sorry. Not sorry at all. Sounds like you need to get some of that tea with some of that honey.
Yes.
Oh, it's allergy season. I know all about it. Oh yeah, it's fun. Welcome to the South.
Right.
All right. Well, we're going to close out now, and next week's episode is going to be about the blue zones. Oh, this one is going to be a fun one. Hey everybody, this is Tony with the Grounded Podcast. Make sure to follow and share the show. Share the show via your social media, friends, and family. And leave a 5 or 4-star review to help us move up in the charts. And by the way, stars 1 through 3 no longer work. Another way you can help the podcast to grow is by subscribing to the podcast for just $2.99 a month. Just basically the cost of a cup of coffee, right? And you can also follow us on Instagram @groundedpodcast_. Thank you. Thank you so much.